Hi there, you're about to listen to Gordon's recent interview with Russ Thomas of RST Coaching Academy. If you'd like to watch the video version of this interview, visit our website at riskinreality.com/services. Here's the audio.
Hi everyone, Russ Thomas here from RST Coaching Academy. Welcome to a new episode of Money Talks, where we talk about money and how to make more of it.
Hey, hello there, everybody in internet land. This here is Russ again from RST Coaching Academy, host of Money Talks, where we talk about money and how to make more of it. Today is going to be an interesting program. I have a new friend on today. His name is Gordon Phillips from Manchester, New Hampshire. He is the head of Woodmar Equity Group, and he's got a few different facets of that organization that he'll probably be touching on, but I can't wait till he gets into this one thing towards the end, probably, of what he's fired up about called rare coins. That's pretty cool. Anyway, something new I've never even heard of investing. So anyway, Gordon, glad to have you on the program today.
And thank you, sir. My pleasure.
I want you to be able to have at it and tell us about Gordon and what you're doing and what's got you all fired up about finances and money these days. And we'll go from there. So take it away, Gordon. Thank you.
Well, thank you, sir. Thanks for having me, Russ. I'm looking forward to this. So I have been what I call a financial unplanner for about 35 years. I started trading and investing as a young man, did well at it, discovered the currency market in 2000, started trading in the Forex, and started teaching courses on that subject. And then I started meeting friends who had suffered badly in market crashes, like the crash of 2000, the crash of 2008 recently. And I helped them to scientifically rebuild their portfolios using the same techniques we use in currency trading. So one day somebody said, can you consult for me? And I looked around the room and I said, what, me? I'm a consultant? I had no idea.
You are now.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Now the pressure is really on, you know.
If they pronounce them, they're business cards.
Yeah. And so I say this with great kindness to the financial planning community, but most of the people who've ever come to me over the years, and I've had a large number of families and small businesses I've consulted with, had been badly damaged in the stock market while in the tender, loving care of licensed planners. And what I realized was that there was no risk management in place whatsoever. There was no downside risk protection in place. It was almost, I guess I could call it loosely, a religious approach to investing. And I mean that with no disrespect to religion. It was basically, you know, hoping and praying with your eyes squinted and your hands clenched and your worry beads that the market wouldn't crash before you tried to retire. So I started approaching things from the risk mitigation and risk management side of things, which is not the side of things most people want to think about. Like, how do you keep your home from being taken away from you? How do you keep your bank accounts from being taken away from you? How do you keep the government from taking 6 to 8% of your purchasing power away from you each year in the form of inflation? You know, how do you shore up so that you've worked your tail off all these years? How do you not become a donor and give all these assets back to these different institutions? Let's get that taken care of first. Then we can have fun with how we can possibly try to go forward making money.
We're trying to save some money first, I think you're saying, right?
Well, I'm saying make sure you can't, if you've saved anything up, you don't want to give it back through a lawsuit. I mean, if you're texting and go through an intersection and put someone on life support, you've just lost your home to foreclosure and bankruptcy or a jealous competitor or a simple slip and fall on your property. So that gets into the realm of asset protection. And then we have, of course, inflation has been running far higher than the numbers that the Fed has been putting out. And so if you're familiar with the rule of 72, which we can calculate how many periods it takes something to double, if you flip that upside down, it's how many periods it takes something to become half of what it started with. and so your current purchasing power will be just about cut in half between 8 to 12 years from now at current rates, which is a complete total crisis, which almost no one's talking about.
Yeah.
So that's where I've begun. That's kind of got me to where I am today.
Well, you know, people put their money in a savings account and think, oh, I've got $1,000 or whatever in the savings account that's earning, what is it, 3-4%?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like they didn't make a gain, they took a loss. You know, when you consider the inflation of everything. This Forex thing, I looked into that. Oh man, I bet it's been 10 or 15 years ago, and it looked so complicated to me. I did not pursue it. But coming into, you know, you're probably in the cryptocurrency world, and that there's a similarity between the two, isn't there?
Sure, quite.
The they're both with all the different cryptocurrencies out there. So anyway, carry on. This is cool.
Well, so where do we go from here? So my function, what I learned to do was, I learned a lot of really interesting little protocols and techniques to help people manage their money that just aren't taught very much. They should be in plain view. They should be talked about on the television, you know, guru shows, but they're not. Like, for example, and this is common in Europe and Australia, you can pay off a 30-year mortgage in less than 7 years using a home equity line of credit. There's a strategic way in which you can combine the use of a home equity line of credit with a mortgage. We obviously don't have time to go into it here right now. But you could literally go on Amazon and Google what I just said and find some very simply, not by myself, just by some very simple to read small ebooks that explain the math and exactly how it works. So that's just an example. Another thing would be you take a married couple with, say, $200,000 worth of debt. All they have to do is find a way, simple ways, economies in their budget, to not spend $5 to $6 to $7 a day each. And within 5 to 7 years, they'll be completely out of debt. By the scientific application of that money, it has nothing, they don't need any extra income, working overtime at the plant, their second part-time job. You just need to understand the mathematics of how to correctly pay off the debt. And it's not anything that I've ever seen on TV. I didn't invent it. I've refined it. And I think I do a good job of teaching and explaining it. But yeah, you show people these things and their eyes like, where did this come from? Why didn't I know this? Like, this is crazy. How come this isn't, you know, on the 7 o'clock news? So I love what I do. I love helping people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's, well, and the banks don't want you out of debt.
No.
The credit card companies don't want you out of debt.
No.
And so why would they promote anything like that? The bank that we use here outside of Daytona Beach, they call it our financial watchdog. Well, I'm sure they are, really. Yeah, it's like, you know, get a loan with us because we are your financial watchdog. What a joke, you know. You know, get in debt to us for 30 years or whatever. So gee whiz, that is quite the concept, though. Is this explained in on your website, yourfinancialrisk.com?
Yes.
And
yes,
we're going to steer people to that after a while, okay?
Absolutely. It might be my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So what's next?
Well, as I was saying earlier, when I do consulting, I've done major consulting packages where I fly people into Manchester, New Hampshire Airport, and we meet and have dinner together. I pay their airfare round trip. I pay their hotel for 3 days. We meet on Friday night for dinner. And then I put them in a hotel room, you know, like a conference room. I lock the door, take the top of their head off, pour it all in for 2 days, and then send them back home and consult with them. Years ago, I used GoToMeeting and GoToWebinar before Zoom even existed, and spend the rest of the year, you know, carrying out all the plans we put together. And people always want to, I just want to make some money. I got to make some money to retire. I said, no, trust me, from the point of view of currency trading, when you trade in any market, I don't care if it's options or stocks or currency or Forex, you always start with risk management. What's the most I'm willing to lose on the very next trade, the very next 10 trades, the next 100 trades? So if you look at your entire lifestyle as one big financial trade, where's my stop loss? That's what we call a stop loss. How low will I allow things to go before I absolutely make a different decision? And so it's I don't like to use the word scientific. It sounds a bit fancy and overblown. It's really just math, but people cringe when you say math because most people hated math in school. But as I like to joke, Ross, it's math at the seventh grade level or fifth grade if you were homeschooled.
Indeed.
or raised in Norway.
And it works.
Yep. Go ahead.
I say, well, math, to me, math is like truth. It's either right or wrong, you know?
Yeah, amen to that. It's 100%. So that's what I do. I like helping people preserve what they've got. And then I have a proprietary system I created called Wealth MRI. which is kind of the equivalent of the medical MRI. So just briefly, you take someone's entire financial world, from all of their assets and holdings down to the pennies in their pocket, and you call it, you know, with air quotes, you call it their financial body. We put it into this big spreadsheet, like the medical MRI machine, and we slice and dice their world, and we give them a report about their true net worth and all of their exposures in a way that most people have never seen before. And some people love it, and some people want to hide under the bed, but whatever it is, it's the truth. The big red X, you are here. And then that's the jumping off point to proceed with making sure that everything's protected. And then what's left over, we're going to grow scientifically into the future. And
is this something that anybody can make use of, or does it fit like a certain income level or a net worth level before it's really going to be beneficial for a person, for a family, for a couple?
You know, that's a very insightful question, Russ. I appreciate you asking. I wish that I had a chance to work with many more young people. I wish I could be working with teenagers and people in their 20s and 30s. For the most part, just demographically, people who find someone like me are probably in their late 40s or early 50s. They can see the retirement finish line coming up in the distance, and they're, maybe it keeps shrinking further away and they're afraid they're not going to reach it. They kind of realize the path they're on isn't working. If they keep doing what they're doing, they're not going to have the financial success or results they were looking for. And they're not pleased with the counsel they've gotten from the regulated. I've never been licensed. I've chosen to remain independent. I don't want to be yoked to Wall Street. I want to be able to come in as a true consultant and be completely objective. And as I like to joke, maybe you're old enough, you and I are old enough to remember this, but was Groucho Marx who said he would never join any club who would have someone like him as a member. And, so I don't want to be regulated by any agency that would regulate me, someone like me, you know. So,
yeah. So thinking about that when you're talking about young people, and I don't know, that might even get them while they're young, basically, and maybe even high school.
Sure.
I interviewed another woman who is writing a book that actually is a courseware to teach high school juniors and seniors financial principles.
Good, excellent.
And financial responsibility. I think I'm going to hook you guys up, because you might have something that she could make use of for her classware too. And it might be beneficial for the kids, obviously, but it might be something that you guys could, you know, work together on as you wanna. And she, I forget what state, what she can do, you know, what she wants to do is a nationwide thing. And some states have actually mandated this type of training, this type of schooling for the kids. And so that's just a really good open door, I suppose, for her. Others might be a harder sell, but it might be a good deal for, I'll get her information to you and hers and yours to her. Anyway, so what a concept. So anyway, I don't know that you specifically answered my question about an income level or a level of net worth that is suitable for these principles. Is it, you know, anybody? I mean, then you went into the young. Of course, they are probably at the lowest income level, just starting out. And maybe that was your answer, that's an indication that, you know, this works for anybody. So does it, in fact?
Well, I tended to work with more higher net worth clients just because they could afford the fees that I was charging when I was doing this full time many years ago. But in recent years, as I've been semi-retired, you know, quote unquote, I've been working with lots of different families. I mean, I'll spend an hour or two for free with people, just give them some insights, give them some good books to read, help them get started on the journey. But I would love to hook up with this lady that you're talking about, because I homeschooled my three kids. And I very, very strongly believe that there should be some kind of national program to compete with the U.S. Department. I'll call it the U.S. Department of Miseducation, if I'm allowed to do that.
Yeah.
and provide the homeschool families with some really solid financial foundation for their children.
Good idea. I'll definitely make the introductions between you two. I know that the talking point that I got from your PR person, Doug, how to financially navigate the new normal. Is this part of that? You talked about from 9/11 and then to the Chinese virus and so on. You know, is this, yeah. This was kind of where this really took off in your mind?
Yeah, I don't want to get down the rabbit hole too far because I don't know who your listenership is. But let's just say that when you do the work that I do, I'm on the board of directors of a currency trading hedge fund out of Vancouver. And I'm around a lot of really smart people who tend to have very deep access into informational sources that are not on TV. Let me just put it that way. Okay. Just to just like where the bodies are buried. And so the odds are very high. Very high that we're heading into extreme financial turmoil over the next 2 to 3 years. And that's going to be a result of the Great Reset, the Great Taking, if you've seen the documentary, the onset of a kinetic war, most likely on the European continent. We've got a lot of chaos coming around the November election coming up. So I think it's imperative that people really evaluate their risk profile and make sure, like I'm just repeating myself from earlier, but make sure they're really locked in terms of at least not giving back what they've worked all these years for to the market, to the Fed, to the politicians, to the bankers, to a litigious, opportunity seeker, whatever it might be, just to make sure they've got that shored up. Now, if you want to get into prepping and planning for the future and hedging and bartering and the coming central bank digital currency, we wouldn't have enough time to cover all that in a half an hour. But yeah, all that in a bag of chips, Russ, it's all going to get really hairy.
Yeah.
And that's cool. The new normal is going to be very much abnormal compared to the world that you and I probably grew up in back.
Yeah,
in the,
what it had been. Well, and then you've got these idiots over in Davos, Switzerland, meeting a couple times a year, wanting to take over the world, yeah. And with all their highfalutin plans. And it sounds good for them, but I don't think it's going to be good for the average person in the street, is it?
Yeah, no, it certainly is not. Their intentions do not include the welfare of the rest of us. Let's just put it as diplomatically as I can.
Power. Another subject here was the CBDC, the digital currency concept.
Right. Yeah.
Is that you see that coming? Is that actually going to hit the streets?
Yeah, it's baked in the cake. They've already gone through all the pilot planning, all the governments of the world. They're starting to roll it out around the planet. China's already rolled it out. The question is, who's going to be issuing it? The Federal Reserve came out recently and protested saying, no, we're not going to do that. But I strongly believe the big money center banks of Wall Street, whether it's Citigroup or Chase or whatever, will be doing it. The objective is, it's hard to explain this succinctly, but about 30% of all taxes have gone uncollected for many, many decades in all countries. It just escapes taxation. And they've got to get every last penny of that. And the way to do that is to go to a complete 100% programmable digital currency. So the money will be in an app on your smartphone. Let's just put it that way. I predict they'll get rid of tax returns completely. There'd be no reason to have you file a tax affidavit every April 15th because they'll just take it out of your account. They could take it out of your account on an ongoing basis the split second that you earn it. And then it could become permission-based, whether or not you're allowed to purchase certain things. You don't have to ban firearms and ammunition. Just put them on the list of things that can't be purchased, and there you go.
Well, yeah, to me, that's the scariest part of their being able to monitor what I, as a citizen, spend my money on, and to be able to draw the line and said, oh, no, you can't buy that. That is just, I mean, talk about the possibility of revolution. I think there's going to be trouble over stuff like that. But do you foresee that it becoming that controlled then?
Yes, I do.
This is not just talk. This is part of the cake, huh?
Yeah, and the worst part about it is, I say it's almost like the invisible fence you can keep a dog in your yard. You know, like we've all had the experience of having a credit card denied. Maybe the stripe was damaged or something. You just pull a different card out and use it, right? Uh-huh. But what about when you become the credit card?
Yeah,
you personally are the credit card.
Yeah,
you can be denied. If you're on a government list and your doctor said that you can't eat any more than 50 grams of carbohydrate a day, then you go to check out those ring dings at the register and you can't buy them. or maybe you can't buy gasoline outside of your own zip code because you've been going to protest rallies. So many ways in which this can be implemented. It's quite draconian. It really takes Big Brother in 1984 beyond when anyone ever conceived of when we were kids.
And for them to have that level of control down to the UPC code of a purchase, that is going to create quite an overhead of program in order to keep track of all this, you know, to program that into their system and then have it aligned with you or me and then what it is that we're buying or cannot buy. I mean, there's going to be some money made on just putting that together, don't you?
Oh, you're totally right.
by the programmers, of which I am one. Maybe I should apply for the job.
my son's a programmer too. He's very aware of this. Yeah, they'll be tying it into your social credit score. They'll be tying it into your driving record, your medical information database, just as they're currently doing in China. You cross the street jaywalking and your score goes down a point. And then all your cost of money goes up. I know. A lot of fun.
In your contacts, do you have an ETA for this hitting the streets?
That's where people make a mistake. All the gurus, they'll say, well, it's going to happen soon. And then it doesn't happen for 3 years and they look foolish.
Yeah.
I would say that the odds of this happening are as close to 100% as you can get. They've got so many games. The big boys and girls have so many games they can play out and stretch these things out as long as they want. I would say within the next 10 years, it's a virtual certainty.
Okay.
Whether it's going to happen by next Tuesday, nobody has any idea. It would take a nice crisis, maybe the onset of World War III, to create the kind of financial crisis where under the auspices of national security or some kind of other urgency, they would need to step in and put all kinds of draconian controls in place, limiting the purchase of precious metals, limiting all kinds of purchases, including implementing some kind of a programmable money, which is what this is. It's computer money, basically.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a ledger entry on the grand account book someplace, in some bank or in Washington or wherever. Yeah. Really wild. So 5 years, 10 years, whatever, we get in the mail, we get our little card or whatever however it's going to be identified. And so from that point on, there's a cutoff. And this is how now we do business, citizens. This is how we do business.
Yeah.
At that time, will there be a kind of a workaround, a loophole that, I've got $1,000 stuck in the dirt here in my backyard. All right. Will I be able to do anything with that? Or is that going to be pretty well null and void on that day?
Well, all they have to do to answer your question is criminalize the so-called workarounds.
Oh, great.
They're very smart. All they have to do, they could ban cash. Cash could be criminalized, the use of cash, for example.
So they would say, they would probably say at one point, 30 days prior to the introduction of this is, okay, citizens, you got 30 days to take all of your cash.
That's right.
And whatever else they want to identify into your local commissary or whatever it might be, turn it in for a credit on your new special digital currency card. Is that about the size of it?
Absolutely, Russ. That's what Franklin Roosevelt did in 1933.
And then you said about this rare coin thing too, but that might be on the list of taboo items then too.
It could be. It's very unlikely. Numismatics or rare coins have never been confiscated by any Western government. Even the United States in 1933, when Roosevelt issued his edict requiring Americans to turn in their gold, rare coins were not on the list. The reason being that most of the world's wealthy politicians, probably every member of the Supreme Court, have all got rare coin collections going back to their great-great-grandparents. And it's such a tiny, tiny slice of the entire precious metals complex. That it's not really worth their going after. And whereas gold and silver have pretty much stayed in narrow channels for the last 3 or 4 years, gold just started to pop up a little bit in the last few months. But rare coins, the rare coin complex was up over 20% last year alone. So that's what I've been recommending with my clients, if they start to take a really hard look at. And I've got some places I can send them to help them do their homework. But
So whether it's now, you know, one of your clients wants to collect rare coins and then someday says, well, you know, I need to cash out. I need to sell some of these quarters, you know, that are 500 years old or whatever the case may be. Or it comes to the point now in this digital currency thing where, you know, golly, I need some extra dough. How will the person be able to sell that stuff? I hear the commercials about gold and silver all the time. And says, oh yeah, buy gold, invest in gold. And you can't go to the gas station and chip off
No, you're right.
a piece of your bullion and pay for your gasoline.
You're absolutely right.
So that's the thing is that it's not that liquid. Even cryptocurrency is more liquid than that as far as these little ATMs now that they've got sprung up for, you know, cashing in and purchasing cryptocurrency. So how is the market in the rare coins? Who sets the prices? You've got the what they call them in the gold and silver. You've got the market makers or whatever
right.
it's called.
Right.
So how will that, do you think, will transpire? How will I sell my rare coins or my gold for that matter if I haven't traded it in yet?
Again, that's a really insightful question. It's a great question. So you're really addressing two different areas. Mm-hmm. One is long-term wealth preservation, where you wouldn't necessarily be looking to sell. You'd be looking to accumulate something that creates a foundation for your family that has true net worth into the future, and not with the intention of liquidating it someday. Now, of course, if you do want to sell it into the market, you'll sell it into the market in exchange for whatever the currency of the realm is, which might just be bits and bytes on your Fed Freedom smartphone app or whatever it may be 20 years from now.
Okay.
But the other side, you're talking about, you're right. What good's a gold coin? If gold goes to $10,000 an ounce, how am I going to buy a gallon of gas? Right. So now you get into barter or prepping. And most people will go for pre-1964 silver dimes. So when you and I were young, previous to 1964, at least I'll speak for myself. Because you're young, you're obviously a young man.
I've been there, yeah.
the coins in our pockets were 90% silver. So you can go to any coin dealer and say, they call it junk silver, they call it bag silver. You can go buy $100, $1,000, $10,000 worth of pre-1964 silver dimes. Some of them are so worn out, you can't even read the date on them. But they're 90% silver and they have a fungible knowable price. You can go to Coinflation, for example, is a good website called Coinflation, and you can look up what the value of these is right this second. So in a true Argentina, Venezuela type market, complete meltdown, which I don't see ever happening in the US, believe it or not, because I think the folks in control are too slick to prevent all that.
Mm.
But, but were that to happen, it's, you know, it wouldn't be difficult to be able to barter a coin that's now worth $10. It's a dime, but it'll get you a sandwich or it'll get you a tank or a gallon of gas or whatever. So.
Oh, I see. So, and these are silver coins. They're still only 90%. They're not pure silver.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that's what they were before they started doing the sandwich deal.
That's right. The clad. Yeah. They're clad tokens. They have no more value than a Subway token.
Yeah. But. Yeah. Even the ones before the sandwich were not even pure silver.
No, they were not. They were hardened with, I think it was copper or nickel, because silver is such a soft metal.
Oh.
But they were 90% silver. They're very durable. They've been around for a long, long, long time. A lot of people I know bought a whole bunch of them. And you can, you know, people say, well, where do I keep this? I'm so afraid. Well, first of all, your safe deposit box is the least safe place to put anything, if you didn't already know that.
Good point. But, good thing to know, folks. Don't put your stuff in a bank safe deposit box.
So what you do is you get a geranium and you just, you know, you put a little plastic bag full of dimes in the bottom, put the dirt back in and stick it right on your kitchen window. The last thing on this planet anybody'd ever look for in there is a bunch of silver dimes.
Yeah. So
just get creative.
Yeah. Well, you know, I nobody should listen to this here, but I'm going to tell you.
I'm not listening.
I keep a couple $100 of cash in the house and then $1,000 outside of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody comes in to rob. This is all the cash I got.
That's
There's
it.
More cash in the house.
That's it.
True, because it ain't in the house. It's in the backyard under the geraniums or someplace, you know.
So the joke is you don't bury it in your backyard. You bury it in the neighbor's backyard. You just don't tell your neighbor.
Put it in the woods someplace.
Well, that's asset protection, Russ, right?
Oh, for crying out loud. Yeah, you got to have a plan, don't you?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
sir,
you just got to be smarter than the bad guys.
Yes,
oh,
you do.
Man. So actually, we've gotten into this other subject now about the rare coins.
Mm-hmm.
And so where do people typically go to find those things? That coinflation, I guess you find out the value of stuff, but
right.
For buying and selling these rare coins, what websites are there for that?
Well, I don't want to, if anybody wants to get in touch with me, I'll be happy to share the source that I have. They've asked me not to promote them on the air because they get swamped with inquiries, with requests. But
okay.
The first thing is most precious metals dealers are, that's not their bag, to use our 70s language, is rare coins. Rare coins, you need to go to a true expert. There are only two or three top numismatic firms in the entire United States that are just absolute state of the art. One of them happens to be in little tiny New Hampshire, not too far from where I live.
Huh.
But these people are absolute rocket scientists. When they're kind, they're genial, they're friendly, they're real family people. And they've got such an amazing reputation. Someone will come to them with a check for $1 million and say, I want you to put together the most elegant, perfect rare coin collection you can for me. And they say, sure, be happy to. It's going to take about 5 years. Because all the rest of the coin dealers will go to the big shows in New York and come back with a wheelbarrow full of coins to sell, and they'll come back with nothing.
Uh-huh.
Because there's nothing there that they think is really worthy. My sister, quick story, my sister some years ago bought a $30,000 coin from a broker in California, rare coin. I brought it with her to these folks in New Hampshire. They took one look at it, said the coin was misgraded. It had been graded one notch too high. I think it was graded one MS67. It should have been a 66. It was actually worth $18,000.
And not 30.
Not 30. The coin dealer that she bought it from in California refused to give her a refund. I mean, rightfully so, because the Professional Coin Grading Society of America had put their blessing on this coin and had rated it as being that level of a commodity. And so this firm, this coin firm in New Hampshire, actually got in touch with the coin graders and got my sister a refund. And she wasn't even one of their clients.
Huh.
They were disturbed that it was a blemish on the rare coin industry. That's the level that these people operate at.
Yeah, man. I wondered if it was just because of, you know, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, and maybe it was the perception of the different people doing the analysis, but that's it, huh?
No, actually not. There's actually very specific protocol that they use to grade rare coins, the luster, the shine. It's a coin will be sitting out in the atmosphere for 150 years. It'll develop this beautiful patina, almost this iridescent shimmer just from oxidation. And they can tell to look at it and the number of bag marks on it. If it was walking around in people's pockets as everyday money of the realm, it would have been nicked and dinged. And, you know, they can just tell. There's a rating in there, and it goes through a committee. There's almost like the Olympics, and they give it. Then it goes in a polycarbonate hard plastic shell with a stamp on it, like a QR code. And it's given a specific rating. You can go to any coin dealer, and they'll look up in their book and say, well, given that year, that coin, that mintage, you know, here's what we'll write you a check. So they're very fungible.
Wow.
You can turn around and sell them back into the market if you want to. It's a very fungible commodity.
Wow. I don't imagine, you know, they're discovering more gold and more silver every day. So they're creating more of the bullion or the coins or whatever. So there's maybe almost a near endless supply of those metals. But these rare coins now,
right. This
is a different world, because they're not making a 1964 dime anymore.
No,
and
absolutely.
So the availability, the supply has got to be shrinking. That drives up the value and therefore the price of everything. And will this be a market that will almost dry up and cease to exist someday? Because one of the things you said before, Gordon, was it's not something that you buy and then you're planning on selling anytime soon. You're going to sit on it for half a lifetime and give it to your family. You know, so if everybody's doing that and more people are getting into it, you know what I mean?
Very few people you'll meet. You could stop 1,000 people in the shopping center and say, do you own any rare coins? They'd stare at you like you had two heads. So there aren't a lot of people who know about this.
Oh.
But to your point, right now, the United States government is going $1 trillion additional into debt every 100 days. Let's just put that in perspective. Meanwhile, you've got a beautiful coin that's in very great condition. It's a 1 ounce Morgan silver dollar, was minted in 1888. They only made so many of them. Many of them were lost over the years. There's only so many left. And every year that goes by, it's more and more rare. It's more and more valuable. It's more and more precious. So those are diametrically opposite situations, you know?
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. Now, it's a lot of fun. They're beautiful. It's a beautiful thing to own. If you're into art, if you enjoy elegant things, it's a beautiful thing. And if you don't have much to start with, you can buy a rare penny, a rare nickel, a rare dime for $100. You can buy a really high quality, just to get started. Even a teenager could do this just to get started with some real value. But that was going to be
my next question is, yeah, what does it take dollar and cent wise to at least break into this thing?
Sure.
$100 maybe for a penny. And you may laugh, absolutely, folks, you may laugh and say, oh, a penny, $100 for a penny.
Sure.
Yeah. That's going to be going up in value every year forever. And so it's a good thing to sit on. So at the same time, so you buy this woman, you know, $1 million worth of stuff.
Yeah.
The plan is to keep it forever. Well, if you never sell it, if you're never going to sell it, what good is it? What's the point?
Well,
at least artwork, you're going to hang on a wall. And people can come and admire and drool over and stuff, but you're probably not going to do that with your precious metal, your coins.
Sure.
So long-term sitting on it, what's the?
No, great. I totally understand what you're saying. If you look at all the different classes of hard assets one could own.
Uh-huh.
Okay. That could be land, raw land. It could be income producing land like rental property.
Uh-huh.
It could be semi-precious stones, antiques. I like collecting collectible newspapers. Like I've got an 1826 newspaper that was printed 3 months after Thomas Jefferson died.
Huh.
And it was issued in his same county in Virginia, where they auctioned off some of his personal effects right on the front steps of Monticello to pay some of his debts.
Oh, boy.
Now, there are people who collect these things. They become more of, I collect them because they're so important to me historically. I'll pass them down to my kids, and somebody could sell them someday.
Mm-hmm.
So to your point, just because you're holding precious metals or you're holding rare coins, it's really no different than any other type of hard asset that you're holding. You'll pass it on to the next generation. Maybe they'll pass it on somewhere down the road. Somebody's going to sell part of it, turn it back into cash, whatever. That's your choice. But the reason to own it is an offset against fiat inflation, because to the extent the dollar continues losing purchasing power by the hour, these assets that are priced in dollars continue to appreciate in value by the hour.
Yeah. Like you said, 20%.
Yeah. Yeah. It really, really, in the short to medium term, it's a hedge against monetary destruction. Now, whether or not you hold it long term as a family legacy asset or put it into an irrevocable trust or all those types of things, well, that's a whole nother conversation.
I see. It makes sense. And also, it just occurred to me that, say, you've got the $1 million here with the coins, or $100 or $1,000 or whatever, that is a good side. That's a good mark on your income, not your income statement, your balance sheet, mm-hmm, basically, you know, adds to your net worth,
sure,
which probably could be borrowed against if necessary.
Sure, it could. Yes, it could.
So anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay. Another one kind of in between here is cryptocurrency.
Okay.
I assume you're a fan of cryptocurrency.
I'm a limited fan of cryptocurrency.
Okay, as am I, yeah.
Yeah, so if all the lights go out in an EMP pulse over the United States and we're sent back to 1880, tell me the value of your Bitcoin again.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear. What was that again?
about zero.
Yeah, it's precisely zero, right? So blockchain is a phenomenal technology. It's right up there with the discovery with Tesla and alternating current. It's right up there with the transistor, the invention of the internet, et cetera, et cetera. It's for real. But it's not an asset class that preserves wealth. It's a contingent form of wealth. It's dependent upon a lot of things continuing to be true and stay stable, including the grid, electrical, you know, the internet being up,
dependent on that. It's not a centralized animal, but it's a dependent animal upon, in this case, specifically the internet. I understand.
Absolutely.
Right? So is, you know, you've got cryptocurrency and then you've got, you know, the run of the mill stocks and bonds, you know, the New York Stock Exchange and so on. There's some similarity between the two, and you're probably a fair student of either one. Is the stock and bond market is volatile in that regard? Is it because it's dependent upon electronics, as is cryptocurrency?
Well, there's so many different ways to look at that, Russ. I don't know how much time we have, but I'll try to be brief. So the stock market has crashed on average every 14 years since the Dow Jones, since Charles Dow created the Dow Jones Industrial Average in the late 1800s, with an average drawdown of about 43%.
Meanwhile, is that contrived? Do you think 14 years?
100%. It's as rigged as nine ways come Sunday. Yeah, but that's another whole rabbit hole conversation.
Good,
but in terms of its ostensible or nominal performance, it's averaged about 6% a year all these years. So you have an average 6% gain with an occasional 43% crash. So that's a risk to reward ratio about 7 to 1. Okay. So as a machine, a mechanism for the creation of wealth, it's extremely poor and extremely inefficient. And the big secret is, if your years of earning and investing, which might be say between 25 and 65, your core years, if that period of time coincides with periods of economic prosperity and rising markets, you're doing great. Everybody's a genius. It's like when the tide rises, everything goes up, the luxury liner and the rusty little rowboat. But if that period of time coincided with stagflation and crashes and Great Depression and another Great Depression, you could end up right where you started, even below where you started, because now whatever you've got left has a tenth of the purchasing power of what it had when you started 40 years earlier.
Understood.
So that's the biggest risk about being in equities. Now, as far as it being a form of electronic money, yes, you're absolutely right. If you've got a 401k, IRA, SEP, KEO, CD, savings account, checking account, it's all just electrons sitting on a magnetized spot on a hard drive. That's what you actually own. And it's ultimately contingent asset, because all kinds of people can come between you and it as to whether or not you're even allowed to access it. And then again, if the grid goes down or there are interruptions in our structure, yes, of course, you wouldn't have access to it anyway. So I'm a proponent of keeping just enough of a footprint in the market to be a duck, look like a duck, quack like a duck, be ostensibly totally normal, and be able to pay your bills every month. But that is the last place that I would put any true net worth.
Investment stuff. The difference here would be that, you know, you buy and you hold, all right, or you day trade. That's a quicker return, and hopefully people can make money quicker on that if they know what they're doing.
There's the big if. Yeah.
Yeah.
For the most part, as I said earlier, there's no risk management in place for most people in the market. So if the market, like the Dow Jones in 2008 crashed 54%, and it took six years to recover. And so by the time it recovered, ostensibly, the Dow crawled back to the highest point it had previously been at. But every single year, the dollar was losing 6%. So even after the, quote, recovery, you still didn't have the purchasing power you started with.
Jeez.
So it's very insidious. It's very hidden. It's all happening behind, you know, really have to understand what you're up against if you're going to try to end up crossing the retirement finish line with anything in your pocket.
The system is rigged.
Well, yeah, it is.
And it's rigged against us. The people in Davos, Switzerland, they'll be all right. Or some of these highfaluters here. I mean, you even mentioned the Supreme Court. You know, they probably got some of this stuff.
I don't believe anything. You're just a conspiracy theorist. I think everything's going to be totally fine.
Just get off the high horse, Russ. I understand. So, hey, this could go on forever, but I got to wrap this up. This is just really... I tell you, I have met some interesting people with all the interviews that I've done, and you are definitely one of them. It's really
one of the weirdest. Hey, thanks.
No, man, it's just awesome. With the background that you've been come from and how you've gotten into this thing, and really you're probably self-educated because you don't want to join a club, and go to school and have to get a certificate, because I think you didn't care for that scene.
No, sir.
You're self-educated and you know what you're doing, and that's really awesome.
Well, thanks, Roy. I appreciate the kind words. I've enjoyed this tremendously.
Deal. So there's somebody sitting out in the audience that says, help me. What can I do? What do you recommend? How do I get started? So this is the time now, Gordon, when you throw out a few sentences of basic advice.
Okay. My big pitch? No, seriously. Well, boy, where do I even begin? Let me put it this way. I'm more than happy to book a Zoom call with anybody on the house for an hour. Literally, no strings attached, no selling, no weirdness, just like you and I, just talking to each other, sharing ideas. Hopefully I'd provide some real value for someone. If they want to take that relationship further, we can talk about it. I would highly recommend that everybody go to, and I have no affiliation with these people, Armstrong Economics, armstrongeconomics.com. Learn who Martin Armstrong is. Sign up for his free blog. In addition to reading it at his website, you'll get 3 or 4 emails typically every day, basically the blog posts that he puts on land in your inbox. Spend 90 days following him. Understand who he is. He's the world's most respected, highest paid ever financial advisor that nobody knows who he is. And you will get an education that will just blow your socks, knock your socks off.
Oh, wow.
So before I would recommend any books to read, if you want to get to the, I like to say that when Morpheus showed Neo the red pill and the blue pill, he palmed the green pill. And the green pill is the pill that takes you down the money hole way past further than Alice ever went. Because at the bottom of the money hole, you got big pharma, big energy, big med, big government, big war, big, right? This guy knows all about that. He's the ultimate international lightning rod. A tremendous place to get an education. So
And they have let him live, huh?
Well, it is, and there's a reason why when you understand. Yeah, it's really quite. He was great friends with Margaret Thatcher. Uh-huh. He's been friends with every president. He managed a trillion dollar hedge fund in the 1980s before anybody even knew who he was.
Oh, wow.
His life story is quite amazing. But anyway, if I were to give someone just a worthwhile source of information, if you want to really learn what's going on in the world, go there. But as far as any way in which I can be of service, I'm more than happy to share some time with folks and just get to know each other, make friends, help out.
Good deal. Appreciate that. And that can be done by yourfinancialrisk.com, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Douglas Carlson will get in touch with them and schedule calls with me.
Good deal. All right. So sure. That's awesome. Cool. So we've just covered that, some couple of tips and how to get a hold of you. And I imagine just like my head, folks, your heads are maybe spinning a little bit here too. But, you know, as I've said, there's only 2 steps to success. Number 1 is to get started. And number 2 is don't quit. And right. So in this area of preserving wealth, and protecting yourself, there's no time like the present to get started, and then don't quit. Right. I like what you had said, Gordon, about the couple being able to save $5 a day or something like that on Starbucks or whatever, you know, and how they can use that to make a big difference in their lives. You know, so many of us are looking for the instant gratification instead of the long term. The long-term picture.
Yeah. It's part of our culture. It's the instant coffee culture, my dad used to call it.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I tell you, years ago, I was doing quite well as a contract computer programmer and a consultant. What did I invest in? Lifestyle. Not for the future.
Right.
So at 75, I still get to be doing a little work too.
Pay the
rent, you know? So I love what I'm doing, and so it's not like work, but I blew it because I was just too greedy for the instant gratification. Yeah, 44-foot motor yacht and all this and that, you know, and everything. Anyway,
can I make a small consulting suggestion?
Sure.
So your steps 1 and 2. Step 3 says see steps 1 and 2.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well,
that's what I say. Get educated, take action. Step three, see steps one and two.
Yeah, indeed. But that's kind of like Warren Buffett's rules for success is number one, never lose money.
Right.
Number two, follow rule number one.
Right. See rule number one. Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I was saying earlier. Don't give back. You work so hard. Yeah. Don't give back your net worth and your assets to crazy politicians on both sides of the aisle, forgive me,
yeah,
and bankster gangsters and everything, all the crazy things that are going to be coming in the next 5 to 10 years. Don't do that. Shore up your life so at least you can depend on what you've got. I call it create your own economy. That's my little pet phrase. Don't be at the effect of the greater economy. Create your own economy. Create your own little castle, your own little drawbridge and portcullis. And if the joke is, if you want to put a moat around it, you can fill it with alligators or lawyers.
Yeah.
But, you know, just protect what you've got and then be intelligent about growing net worth from there. But don't do it in the face of already risking what you have, especially if you've got excessive debt.
Yeah. Well, if you've done a background check on me, you know, I'm a friend with Grant Cardone and licensed with his coaching program and training, sales training and so on. And he is a big proponent in you save money, not to save money, but you save money until you get enough that you can invest it. And then you invest it in something that's going to generate cash flow.
Yep.
His mode of choice happens to be real estate apartments, you know. But the thing is to be doing something, not just to be trying to maintain the status quo, because that's a losing proposition.
I agree 100%. You couldn't have said it better.
I got to let you go. This has been too cool, but I got to let you go.
Well, this has been great. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for your time.
And, all right.
I hope that people will tune in. And even if they don't take the step to contact you, I hope that they will have been listening some of this and rewind some of these things that have come from you and take these things into account. Folks, this has been Money Talks, where we talk about money and how to make more of it. And this has been a great subject matter today, a great conversation in that whole realm. Cash flow, wealth preservation, and so on for the long haul. You are living for the long haul. And so you need to be prepared for the long haul. Don't do what I did. Just spend it on lifestyle, but plan on doing something for the future. You got to do that. So again, this is Russ here with Gordon. Another episode of Money Talks, been a blast. And we thank you for tuning in and look forward to seeing you again. And you got anything to say to me, get a hold of me. You'll see the information at the end. Anything for Gordon, get on that website, book the call, look at that. You know, this guy, I don't know what he would charge normal people, but for some reason, he must like us or something. So he's offering to do this at no charge. So I would dive into it for it. So anyway, thanks, folks, for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time. All right. So till then, over and out. Bye-bye.
Hi, thanks for being here today for another episode of Money Talks. I hope it was informative and encouraging to you. If it struck a chord in your heart, or if you have any questions or comments, please let us know. Visit us at rstcoachingacademy.com, call 386-286-2450, or send an email to email@rstcoachingacademy.com. Thanks again, and until next time, be great.